There's some advancement happening in Apple II floppy imaging, and it's going to change a lot of things about how we think about Apple II software. But if Apple II software isn't your thing, well, there's so much more to be learned from what's happening with it. This is Jason Scott. You're listening to the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Brenda Romero, Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other Patreon supporters making this podcast and paying off my debt possible. If you want to join the fun, it's patreon.com/textfiles. So, Apple IIs have a very interesting situation when it comes to their floppy disks, co-designed by Steve Wozniak and involving a pretty interesting mechanism at the time. Apple II floppy drives allow an enormous amount of software control over their operation. With a lot of media, it can be simply a case of putting in the media and then the device reads it. So if there's something special put into it, like copy protection or some sort of verification, it's just wired in hard into the circuits. It's not really something you can change. We've seen advancements in Blu-ray and with other technologies where you can basically put them through upgrades so that you can go from version whatever to version whatever. But with Apple IIs, you could take the operation of the floppy drive head and shift it. You wouldn't just be able to read sectors. You could read half sectors. You could make the head move in strange and weird ways. And it started this whole arms race in copy protection. This arms race left, when all was said and done, a battlefield completely covered with unexploded bombs in the forms of all sorts of floppy disks that looked normal by every measurable case, but in fact were doing bizarre things under the hood. In the modern era, when we're trying to save the Apple II software history, we're running into these unexploded bombs left and right. A floppy disk that looks like it's going to work suddenly stops working halfway through on the fourth or fifth level. Perhaps a disk looks like it's completely scrambled and unreadable, some sort of magnetic anomaly, but actually it's running software to make the floppy head shift over a little bit into a spiral track, or one-quarter track, or inventing new sector layouts, and even in some cases looking for damage within the disk itself, and not working if it didn't find that damage. If you've followed me at all, you know that I am the biggest fan of 4AM, a Apple II cracker who is tireless in creating these wonderful, clean cracks of vintage Apple II software. Clean cracks, if you're not aware of all that terminology, are basically cracks that allow the programs to be copied, but in which only the protection is removed. We don't have additional Easter eggs or title screens or any removal of features to make it easier to copy other than the copy protection. These clean cracks are already up on the 4AM collection at the Internet Archive. This is wonderful work because 4AM documents what they do. You look up this particular 4AM project and you won't only see a cracked game of, say, Crisis Mountain or Dino Eggs, but you will also see a walkthrough, bite by bite, explaining the trials and tribulations, the ups and downs of software cracking. It's really precious, and we've been so lucky to have so many hundreds of these 4AM projects happen. In fact, 4AM, just to mention, is like having a rocket scientist show up to a preschool, because there's a program they've made called Passport, and it automates most of the cracking projects. This means that unless something is particularly new, we're not going to see a large write-up, but simply a case that Passport did all the right things. In this world, it's going to be very, very simple to copy basic protection and focus on difficult protection. But at the end of the day, these are still modified Apple II discs. They're not the original discs. And if we're going to tell ourselves that we're doing something good for preserving all the aspects of Apple II floppies, we're going to need a format that encapsulates all of the intricacies. Enter the WAS format, created by John Morris. This format allows all of the protection and idiosyncrasies of Apple II floppies to end up in the file, along with metadata and a lot of other aspects. So this format is created by a hardware product called Applesauce that is coming out this year. Multiple people have it in their hands. It's not vaporware. And it creates an image in WAS format using a regular Apple II floppy drive that is being controlled by this tiny box. And the resulting WAS files are large. They're in the megabytes. But they really do truly capture pretty much all of the aspects of the Apple II floppies. The next step is having emulators that can play it. And there's now the Virtual 2 emulator, and soon the MAME emulator, that will be able to read these .waz files and turn them into functioning Apple II programs. This is enormously good news. In 2018, we are now entering a world where you'll have these WAS files sitting up on the Internet Archive, and when you click on our emulator in the browser, it will boot up from this WAS disk a fully functioning, copy-protected disk and work exactly as it used to back when the disk was on plastic. Canonical experience. And we've been busy. There have been contributors and collaborators who are using prototype Applesauce systems to image disks that are incredibly rare, disks that may only have one or two copies left in the world, and which are now imaged in their entirety and available to boot into functioning emulators and, actually, right back to floppy disks. Who'd want to do this? You'd be surprised. I am surprised. I have folks all the time who their first response when they find out that it's capable of writing disks is to go, great, I can get my original Apple II to run this again. So now you have the cutting edge Apple II news. The WAS format is now completely documented. It's up on the Internet Archive. WAS files are being created, and WAS files can now be booted into emulators. This should be the end of the story, but it's only the beginning. You see, I'm wondering a lot about the fundamentals of what we're doing here. After more than a half decade at the archive, really focusing on imaging and getting up as much software as possible, I am really starting to think about what are we doing here? The archive has now terabytes and terabytes of software, ranging across all sorts of platforms, everything from the ZX Spectrum and the Atari 800 over to DOS, Windows, Macintosh. I mean, we've been really, really going at it. Every day, people are now uploading dozens of CD-ROM images. They're uploading tons of floppy disk images. And we have crates and crates of it sitting at the archive that we've also got volunteers going through, turning those into magnetic images. Images that will be bootable and will show up on the emulator. But what then? What role will vintage playable software play in the modern world? It comes down to end users, I think. I've tried to think about what end users will want in the future, and it's a crazy game because end users, you can never predict what they're looking for. Maybe somebody wanders in and says, you know, I want every Apple II program that ever took place or described a European country. I want to know every game that used both buttons of a custom joystick, or which used this slot on a computer in ways to make the sound card do different things. it's all sorts of questions that a researcher will have that it only comes with the highest fidelity recording, and frankly, not every piece of vintage software has been so lucky. The Apple II situation is very unique. It's a very thriving community. I go to Kansas Fest every year, the week-long Apple II festival, and it might as well be a machine that came out 2 years ago for all of the excitement. People create new products, or show off projects, or do all sorts of games and talk about things they've discovered for a machine that is well into its fourth decade. It's got crackers who are taking software and make it run again. It's got top-notch coders who are playing with the code. It's got people who still collected a bunch of these floppy disks and have made them available to myself and others to image so that we are growing the corpus of what Apple IIs had by leaps and bounds. It's a perfect storm. It's the ideal situation. But is that even enough? We can digitize every manual at 600 dpi into TIFFs and make them readable on the archive down to the tiniest piece of a letter. We can take all of these programs, make them playable, sort them, integrate them with the Mobi Games collection of Apple II information, and have full descriptions of what people are playing and link them to a manual. Is that enough? What about the fact that there's games down there that never got the love, that people don't know about, that need someone to say, hey, everyone, I know you never heard of this game, but it only sold through a few ads in Compute Magazine. Maybe we should take a stronger look at it. Here's what I've learned playing it. In fact, one of the unintended audiences for a lot of this software turns out to be YouTube channels. Channels where somebody makes it their goal to play a whole bunch of games from an older platform and walk through playing it so that they make funny commentary and experience it for the first time for the audience. Those people are hungry for content. They need to find more software. So for them, playing Apple II is just around the bend and will provide some amount of entertainment. But that's not history, is it? I mean, they could try to track down the original creators of these programs. We've been so lucky to find many of these folks before they're gone. We could try to figure out which companies did what, which ones innovated along which way. I mean, we could become true and honest scholars in the Apple II software industry and cross-correlate with a timeline and a clickable interactive 3D graph. But to what end? Is that what people want? I mean, every day on the internet we get told about some amazing project that represents somebody's months or years of work, where they've gone ahead and taken a bunch of information and collated it and made an amazing interface to it, and you go over to it, and what's your first thought? Well, I mean, your thought might be how the interface is cool and that it's got this neat 3D effect and it mentions something that matters to you and you click on it and say, yep, that's the thing that matters to me. But is that as far as it gets? Are we going to get TV Guide capsule reviews, or are we going to get film criticism essays? Are we going to find a beautiful unifying theory of Apple II software, or are we going to be content to have the same 20 or 30 games that everybody plays once or twice and remembers or messes with until it bores them? I don't know. So while we're working on all this, I try to plan for everything. When we put together a large Apple II collection, say, I try to make items that are nothing but large archive files of everything that's being messed with. So if somebody has 1,000 files that they uploaded, I make sure that those 1,000 files are left as they were sent to me, one big zip file, one big tar file. The reason being, because of a book I read about beginning system administration by Eileen Frisch, and she mentioned an archaeological approach where people would always put together old vases and artifacts such that they could be pulled apart again and then put together even better in the future. I've never wanted it that I've become a permanent stamp on everything anyone's touched, so that in the future, they're not just trying to dredge out the meaning of the Apple II software, they're also trying to undo whatever I and we did to it. I want it that somebody new, who may not even be born yet, will create an Apple II window that will give insight and give wonder, and they might know my name, but they might never know my name. They might not know the name of everyone who did this work, and just simply enjoy it on its own terms. Now, take the Apple II as the perfect storm and imagine what it's like for these other platforms, for the Texas Instruments or the Ataris or the Tandy computers or the K-Pro or machines that only had a small run in the early 1980s before dying forever, or the 1970s or the 1960s. It's going to be harder and harder to find this software, to get it off of the original magnetic media and make it run. And even then, we're going to encounter level upon level upon level of relevancy. This is what keeps me up at night. This is the stuff that keeps me wondering if we're doing it as we should, or if I should be thinking about things in an even wider scope. There's stuff that I do called stunts, right, where we'll go through a collection of software and find some theme, and I'll either write an essay or create some sort of sensation on the web. Rob Manuel, who is the creator of Beta and who did amazing Flash animations back in the early 2000s, we had the opportunity to hang out recently in London, and we just talked about our lives, and I'm a huge fan of the things he's done, and he's been creating bots, and we've just started working on a bot called Your Computer, Y-O-R-E, Computer, on Twitter. And what it's going to do is take random British computer magazines, show the cover, and then show three random images inside. It's just going to cause conversation. It just adds a bunch of video game and computer nostalgia into people's Twitter feeds. It's an experiment. It doesn't hurt the original works. It doesn't change anything about the archives we have. It just presents it all, makes it fun, makes it a part of the conversation, and we'll see where it goes from there. That's what the future may hold. A tour guide, a sideshow, a display, a stunt, an artwork, a symposium with things on the walls, a rewriting. I don't know where it's going, but whatever it is, it's what drives me to know that the work we're doing now, the work we're doing with disk formats and hardware and all the other strange projects that take 15 minutes to explain and then 2 minutes to walk back from, that all these projects we're working on will ultimately make a difference. So I'm going to keep thinking about it. Think about where all of this old software plays in the modern world, what uses it's going to have, and I'm going to do my best to ensure that if any of my choices are wrong, they'll be undone. So let's revel in what we have. Enjoy the games we can play. Enjoy the manuals we can read, the magazines we can browse through, and maybe, for a fleeting moment, or a weekend, enjoy the world that these computers always promised us that we would have. This is Jason Scott. You've been listening to the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast. Thanks to James Bakoyanu, Sam Johnston, and the hundreds of other supporters who are helping me get out of debt. I had kind of a breakthrough when it came to my digital debt. I had a bunch of projects that were sitting on hard drives that really needed to be gone through, especially on the staging machine at the Internet Archive, and those have pretty much all been pushed through. Terabytes of data are now sitting on the Internet Archive's archives, and from there, I can now focus on, once again, ingesting media, editing video, and just getting a whole bunch of other stuff directly online. It's been feeling pretty great. And as I'm traveling through some of these memories and long forgotten plans, I'm thanking you for allowing me to focus on that. And I really do encourage you, when it comes out, to play some of these Apple II games in the format we're hoping to put them up, because it's going to be copy-protected mode, but it's also hopefully going to be canonical entries that give you full links and full information about these Apple II programs. I mean, if in fact these are acting just like the original programs, they deserve the links and the manuals and the descriptions of those programs. So it's going to maybe really energize people who vaguely remember Apple IIs and present them the best way that I think we can in the modern era. Thanks so much.